Welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, the latest on shares, markets and investments, now available on your Amazon Alexa.
Hello and welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, now also available on the UK Investor Magazine mobile app. For today's podcast, we're going to be taking a look at a London-listed investment trust. It's a trust that focuses on the asset class of forestry. We're going to be looking at the global timber market dynamics, and then we're going to be drilling down into the individual assets that the investment trust holds. The trust is the Foresight Sustainable Forestry Company, and to discuss the trust, we're very kindly joined by Richard Kelly, who is the co-founder and co-lead of the investment trust, Foresight Sustainable Forestry. Richard, thank you very much for being on the podcast today.
Jonathan, yes, good morning. Thank you very much for having me.
So regular listeners and users of UK Investor Magazine will be aware that Richard presented back in September and presented the trust then. So this podcast is really following on from that presentation. So if anybody would like to watch that presentation in full, do check out the video section on the UK Investor Magazine website, where you'll be able to find out a little bit more, and there'll be some illustrations there. But we're going to be looking at the trust and what's been happening in recent months. Before we get into it, please, Richard, for people that aren't familiar with the trust, would you be able to give an introduction, first of all, to yourself, as well as the Foresight Sustainable Forestry Trust, please?
Absolutely. Yeah. So my name's Richard Kelly, and I co-founded and co-lead Foresight Sustainable Forestry. I've been with Foresight Group, which is the investment manager for the investment trust for 9 years. And for the last five to six of those, I've been solely focused on investing in forestry and natural capital. Foresight Sustainable Forestry is the London Stock Exchange's first and still only investment company focused on UK forestry and natural capital. And the trust really offers investors direct and liquid access to the attractive characteristics of forestry and afforestation, which is traditionally it's an illiquid asset class, and there have been high barriers to access the asset class until we IPO'd a couple of years ago. We primarily invest in afforestation assets, and that just means we take bare land in rural parts of Scotland, Wales, and Northern England, typically sheep and pasture land. We acquire it, and then we develop it and convert it into new forests. We also invest in existing forests as well, which provide an income for the investment trust.
Thank you very much for the introduction to the trust. I think the question is, why forestry? Why forestry now?
There is global recognition that we are in the midst of a climate emergency. And trees, as they grow, directly sequester and suck carbon out from the atmosphere. So in that sense, they make a very direct contribution to both the fight against climate change, but also to the fight against biodiversity loss. I think in terms of timing and within the UK, forestry is recognised by the UK government as a key part of its national net zero plan, that there is not a credible way to achieve UK net zero 2050 without a substantial amount of woodland creation across the UK. And as a result, we have seen increasingly generous grants that are available, and that increases the returns that are available for woodland creation in the UK. And then I think the final point to make on this is as a result of the fallout from Brexit. Brexit has meant that the basic payment scheme, or the BPS, which is the main subsidy for farming, is being completely tapered away over several years. It is being replaced with a different subsidy regime. But overall, the level of subsidies that goes to traditional farming and agriculture is forecast to decline really quite steeply. And that is pushing many farms and pieces of agricultural land to the point of becoming uneconomically viable. And there is an opportunity to, you know, acquire and transform that land into, sustainable forestry, which is fundamentally more valuable. So from that perspective, now is a great time to get into UK forestry and woodland creation.
Thank you very much. So we're going to take a top-down approach to this podcast. So we're going to start with looking at the global timber market, and then we're going to move through to look at the individual assets within the trust. So, Richard, what's happening out there in the global market at the moment? You know, looking back a few years ago, we saw lumber hit record highs. Of course, it's come down since then. So what are the key influences out there that you're keeping an eye on that are driving the underlying prices of timber at the moment?
Globally, following decades of deforestation and unsustainable forestry, so where timber is harvested but then not restocked, there is a very substantial global supply deficit. The World Bank estimates that there is about a billion cubic meters of timber supply deficit currently. And looking forward, they are forecasting that supply deficit is going to more than triple by 2050. And that's underpinned by a growing population and urbanization, where timber is required. But also there are significant shifts towards the use of more sustainable materials. And timber and sustainable timber is a carbon negative material and has, excellent sustainability characteristics. So it's increasingly being used as an alternative to more fossil fuel intensive materials such as steel and cement.
We're going to be discussing a little bit later on in the podcast, Richard, the carbon market and how the investment trust fits into that. But of course, the trust is focused on the UK. So it would be good to get a bit of context as to what's happening in the UK market at the moment and where it fits into the global picture of the timber market.
Yeah. So this global shortage of the supply of timber is really amplified in the UK. It might surprise you to hear that the UK is actually one of the least forested countries in Europe. We only have about 13% canopy cover versus nearly 50% on average across the rest of Europe. And as a result of that, we are a very substantial net importer of timber. So we import between 80 and 85% of all timber that is consumed within the UK. And incredibly, that makes the UK the third largest importer of forest products and timber globally. And we're only behind China and the US. So there is this real shortage of sustainable timber production in the UK, and that structural imbalance is really long term by its very nature. You know, we could plant all of the trees that we need to resolve that structural imbalance, but it literally takes 35 to 40 years for those trees to grow and reach maturity for harvesting before that would in any way impact the supply side. So there's this long-term structural imbalance, and that presents quite a compelling investment opportunity, because by establishing new forests in the UK, they're expected to enjoy appreciating timber prices because of this fundamental and long-term shortage in the supply of forestry in the UK.
Thank you very much. So I think we should move on and probably, Richard, look at the assets that are held within the investment trust. Of course, that they're forestry, and you're very heavily into afforestation across the UK. But it would be good to give listeners an idea of where these are located, the stages that they are. You know, are these very early plantations that have just been planted, or do you have assets within the portfolio which could be ready to be produced into timber in the coming years? What does it sort of look like in terms of the geographical location across the UK and the stages of the assets within the portfolio?
Sure. So we currently have a portfolio that extends over just more than 12,500 hectares, which is a substantial land area. About just less than 50% of the portfolio is invested in properties that have some form of afforestation or woodland creation potential. The other just less than 50% is invested in existing forests that have a whole mix of different age class and tree species within them. But those existing forests, every year a proportion of them can be harvested and generate an income for the company. In terms of the afforestation side of the portfolio, I mean, that really is the engine room of FSF's sort of returns and, you know, positive environmental impact. So the portfolio has nearly 4,500 hectares of land with afforestation potential in the portfolio. And just to put that number into perspective, I mean, that is equivalent to the total, a third of the total amount of tree planting that the UK achieved last year. So it's a material portfolio from a national perspective. And there are broadly three stages to our afforestation assets. So we start by acquiring land that we deem has excellent afforestation potential. But that land, it doesn't come with planning permission or the woodland creation grant, both of which are needed to facilitate planting. So the first stage is it's development stage land, and we're looking to secure that planning permission and grant approval. Once we've then secured both of those, it moves into something called planting stage. So it's in the process of being planted. And then once these forests have been planted, they move into a category called establishment stage afforestation assets. So for the first 2 to 3 years after the forests have been planted, the trees are in a process of stabilization. There will be an expected level of mortality, and there's some quite active management to sort of beat up failed saplings and restock them with new ones. They're the three stages. And once we get past the establishment stage, the afforestation asset is then deemed as an established forest. But it's really from our perspective, it's the moment when the forest has reached its planting completion milestone that we are receiving voluntary carbon credits that recognise the additional and permanent carbon that this forest will be sequestering from the atmosphere, and also the capital appreciation moment where we've successfully converted, you know, relatively cheap pasture and grazing land into fundamentally more valuable forested land. In terms of just geography, where these properties are located, 85% of the portfolio is located in Scotland. Scotland is much more forested than both England and Wales. And there are two clusters in Scotland. There's a sort of central and south Scotland cluster where there's a significant number of sawmills and offtake for the timber that we're producing. And there's a second cluster in Aberdeenshire. We also have a cluster of properties in Wales as well, and a couple of properties in England. But the majority, the lion's share of the portfolio is located in Scotland.
That's a really interesting point that you make there about the majority of the portfolio being located in Scotland. So I just want to delve into that, if you may, quickly, Richard. I mean, what's driven that? Is that because you mentioned there that there's the infrastructure in terms of sawmills in the area, so it's just from a cost perspective being more efficient to be close to these? Is it down to planning? Is there not as much in the way of acceptance in England for these types of projects and maybe more favourable in Scotland? What's really driving the locations of these plantations?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have literally mapped all of Scotland, Wales and Northern England, and we've overlaid a whole series of map-based criteria that constitute land with good afforestation potential. And we're talking some 25 to 30 criteria. And we've identified a specific list of 4,500 properties that meet all of our criteria. And we systematically approach the landowners of these properties and make them an offer to acquire their land. And I think what Scotland has is it's a real sweet spot of the land prices. The agricultural land prices are slightly less than in England and Wales. So we're able to acquire the land slightly cheaper. So that, the capital appreciation that's available when we convert it into forested land, all else equal, is slightly better. I think also the kind of planning and grant approvals process in Scotland is much more developed. And so we see the kind of planning risk associated with developing these schemes as slightly less in Scotland. And then I think the third key factor is, the location of sawmills and offtake. Because Scotland is just more forested, there's a more established, sawmill and timber processing industry up there. And proximity of forests to offtake is important because it is relatively expensive to haul timber any great distance.
Thank you. So the next question that I have, Richard, is really about the mechanics of the trust and how it works in terms of your processes. Are you investing in companies that are operating these plantations and forests? Or are you going out and actually, as the trust, buying the land yourself and then have the management systems in place to get the labour out there to plant the trees and then later harvest them? And I think it ties in quite nicely with how the trust actually generates returns for investors. How much of the process there that you have in place is generating returns? Is it just sort of looking at companies that are operating in the area, or are you actually getting in there, you're planting the trees yourself and then taking off the offtake to sawmills and generating cash that way? It'd be good to sort of get an idea of, yes, the underlying asset class is forestry, but how is it actually positioned and what are the mechanics within the trust?
Yeah, so the trust has a series of wholly owned subsidiaries, which have primarily been set up for sort of tax and operational purposes. But the underlying... The investment trust is investing in freehold land. So companies within the group structure directly acquire the title and the freehold to the land that we're investing in. Most of the time we're acquiring the property directly. Occasionally, a seller may have put the property in a corporate structure and we might acquire the company. But that's a sort of a rarity. I would say typically we're acquiring the land directly, but really primarily this is an asset backed investment that's where there's a whole portfolio of land sitting beneath it. So just in terms of the business model and how the fund generates returns, the engine room of returns is afforestation, woodland creation. So we're looking to identify land with afforestation potential. Now, this is typically sheep grazing land and pasture land that has perhaps become sub-economic for continuing in agriculture. We acquire that land, secure the grants and permits, physically plant these trees, the forest established, and then we're looking to sell and exit these young established forests. And by doing that, we're able to realise a significant capital appreciation. And so we have planted in total so far since IPO, 6 new forests from scratch that have seen 1.5 million trees planted. And on those first 6 forests, we've increased the value of the property, those 6 properties, by 98.5% as a result of reaching that planting completion milestone. And that uplift in value is a combination of the fact that this is a de-risked asset now. It's a valuable property from a timber generation perspective, but also we've generated voluntary carbon credits, which have a value as well. So that's the engine room of the returns, afforestation. We also have an allocation to existing established forestry. And our approach there is to largely buy and hold these existing forests. And we manage them on a rotational basis, harvesting the timber as it matures. Often we're looking to restructure these forests, so to enhance their design, enhance the species mix, enhance the productivity. So we're adding value to the existing assets. We make money for the company from, yes, harvesting the timber from these assets. But because of the fundamental shortage of forestry in the UK and this increased supply deficit that is forecast, we're expecting over the long term that the price of timber and therefore existing forestry assets to appreciate, as well as generating an income. So that's primarily the business model and how we make money for the company.
Thank you, fantastic. So what I'd like to do now, Richard, is if we may move on and look at, this is an overarching themes in investment trusts at the moment, and it's, I think we're at record discounts across the space at the moment. And we're also operating now in an area where there's increased scrutiny from the regulator in terms of NAV and how NAV's calculated for illiquid assets. So I wanted to get your views on that and what you're doing at Foresight within the trust to give listeners a good insight into, you know, what the NAV is at the moment, how you calculate it, how regularly you calculate it, and just maybe your views on the discount of the share price compared to your NAV at the moment.
Yeah, so the investment company has a 6-monthly valuation. We appoint an independent valuer, and that valuer uses a Royal Institute of Chartered Surveyors, or RICS, Red Book valuation methodology. And that methodology looks at, over the last 6 months, it's looking for comparable transactions that have completed. So similar forests of a similar structure in the local vicinity where transactions have completed. And it's then using that comparable set to inform the valuation of our assets. And the valuer makes appropriate adjustments to the actual comparable transactions that have been informed. So it's a backwards looking valuation methodology. And it's based on actual transactions in the market, and that, I think, is quite different in a way to many investment trusts. Certainly, most renewables and infrastructure investment trusts, for example, use a discounted cash flow approach, where the manager projects and forecasts, costs and revenues, makes adjustments, and then that's approved. That's a forward-looking approach, whereas ours is a backwards-looking approach. But I think the key point is that this is a completely independently sourced valuation based on actual comparable transactions. So that's the main basis of our valuation. So yes, Foresight Sustainable Forestry is trading at a discount to its published net asset value at the current time. But the Foresight Sustainable Forestry is not alone. Most, if not all, listed investment trusts are trading at discounts and significant discounts to their net asset values at the current time. This is something that is affecting most investment trusts in the sector to greater or lesser degrees. And I think what is driving that is we've seen is really the macro. So we've seen rising base rate interest rates, and so many investors are reallocating out of alternatives and into bonds and fixed income. So I think I think the other component is the cost of living crisis and inflation. We have seen some investors, particularly retail, have just sort of been redeeming and reducing the amount of capital that they have invested in the market, and so that creates a short term downward pressure on share prices, and so we have seen share prices disconnect at the current time generally from net asset values. I think there was an interesting statistic that the Association for Investment Companies published earlier last week, its findings were that when discounts were this wide at the end of 2008, after the financial crisis, the average investment company returned 39% over the next year and 119% over the next 5 years. So I think these discounts, and it's also the view of the AIC that represents a good buying opportunity to get access to the underlying assets that are within investment companies generally. And I think for Foresight Sustainable Forestry specifically, since we've IPO'd, we've been delighted with the operational performance of the business, and we have been delivering on the business plan, which is primarily focused around successfully planting new forests. And as I mentioned, we've planted 6 forests to date. We have a further 37 in the portfolio, many of which we are on track to achieve that planting completion milestone by the end of March 2024, so within 6 months, in time for the next valuation, NAV valuation update. And as I've mentioned, when these afforestation schemes complete planting, that is the kind of capital appreciation moment where the independent valuer recognises the uplift in the value of the property, and it's also when we recognise the voluntary carbon credit value that has been created. So I think we're tracking well, and our guidance remains unchanged that we're on track to plant many of our schemes by then, and expect to see the associated NAV uplifts with that moment.
Yes, I mean, just looking at the discounts, we welcomed a CEO of a private wealth manager based in the Midlands to the podcast last week, and they hold a significant number of investment trusts. And he was discussing the discounts at the moment, and he was saying that was really an area that they were looking at and saw a massive opportunity. And just a few days afterwards, I think, as you mentioned there, Richard, the AIC put out a report on the discounts being at record levels, and then put out some statistics as to what had happened in previous periods where there were such large discounts. So obviously maybe an opportunity there. But I just want to go back to the correlation of the NAV, because you did mention there that it's fairly unique in the way that you calculate the NAV, which I think is quite interesting, because it's actually looking back at what's happening on the ground to some extent, and it's a comparison, from my understanding, against peers and what's actually happening there in the market as compared to other valuation methods, which are using discounted cash flow methods, which employ discount rates and can change pretty sharply and pretty quickly sometimes. So being a unique trust and being the only trust listed in London with underlying assets in forestry and having that unique element and way of calculating the NAV, I just want to look at the correlations, Richard, and where do you see correlations with your NAV? And how you compare that to other asset classes? I mean, what is the NAV for the trust most correlated to? Is it most correlated to equity markets? Is it infrastructure markets, private equity, fixed income? You know, for the NAV of your trust, what are the closest other assets out there that you see?
Yeah, I think one of the key appeals of forestry and natural capital investment is its lack of correlation to traditional asset classes such as equities and bonds, and also lack of correlation to other alternatives such as infrastructure and renewables and energy prices. And so from that perspective, you know, an investment in forestry and the NAV of you know, of UK forestry is not strongly correlated, and so offers, you know, strong portfolio diversification benefits when added to a, you know, a diversified, you know, a balanced portfolio. And I think underpinning that lack of correlation is that at the core of it, trees continue to grow and add biomass and density regardless of what is going on in the economic environment. And as a forest manager and a forest owner, trees have a typically 5 to 10 year sort of optimum harvesting window. And so forest owners have the ability to delay harvesting in times when perhaps timber prices are slightly softer, to bring it to market when timber prices are stronger. And in the meantime, the trees have continued to add, you know, volume and weight and become more valuable. And so that's a key defensive quality of the investment trust, which is quite unique compared to many other investment trusts. You know, for example, you know, renewable energy investors, you know, when the renewable energy is generated, I mean, it's sold in real time. It's more difficult to store that energy up and then play the energy markets in that way, for example. And so I think it's that. It's not correlated to other asset classes. I think one thing that I would observe is that over the long run, forestry does have inflation beating characteristics, and so from that perspective, it does offer, you know, a good hedge against rising inflation and which is the sort of environment that we're currently in.
Thank you very much, Richard. So we're going to move on now. And you did mention carbon credits earlier on in the podcast, and that's something I just want to pick up on now. Because looking back to the presentation that you gave in September, that it was for me personally, that was quite an interesting element, because of course there's the underlying business to some extent of buying the land, planting the trees and harvesting them, which produces returns for investors. But there's this secondary, to some extent, I don't know whether you'd call it secondary, but element of the business, which is the carbon credits. You know, this is obviously something that's been around for some time, but this is something that can provide investors in this trust returns in the medium to longer term. So it'd be good if you'd be able to detail how that actually works within the trust, please.
Yeah, absolutely. So when we're creating an afforestation scheme, with the Woodland Carbon Code, which is the UK body that issues voluntary carbon credits, they have a defined methodology and a calculator. And so for every ton of additional carbon dioxide that is permanently sequestered from the atmosphere, as in for a period of 100 years or more, they will issue us and other investors in afforestation assets with one voluntary carbon credit equals one ton of carbon dioxide. And so FSF's portfolio of nearly 4,500 hectares of land we're looking to plant, we're expecting to generate between 1 and 1.2 million voluntary carbon credits. Now, those credits ultimately are intended to be used by companies. And so when a company says we're going to be net zero by 2030 or 2040, whatever their pledge is, there is only two ways that a company making that pledge can fulfill it. The first is they need to decarbonize their supply chain and their activities by at least 90%. but there will always be a residual of 5 to 10% of emissions that are considered unabatable. It is not possible to avoid these emissions with current technologies. And for that 5 to 10% of emissions, these companies will have to purchase and retire voluntary carbon credits of the sort that Foresight Sustainable Forestry is creating. And what is exciting about the market for voluntary carbon credits is that we have observed a literal exponential increase in the number of companies who have made science-based net zero pledges. So that's the highest integrity form of a net zero pledge. There's been a doubling in the number of companies who have made those pledges for several years now, and I believe we're through 5,000 companies globally who have made these pledges. And as a result of all these pledges, there is a forecast shortage in the supply of voluntary carbon credits. And Boston Consulting Group are forecasting that there will be an insufficient inventory to meet demand as soon as 2027. And as a result, voluntary carbon credit prices are forecast widely to increase very significantly in the run up to 2030 and beyond. The forecasts range from a sort of a sevenfold increase to a 32-fold increase in voluntary carbon credit prices, and that is material for Foresight Sustainable Forestry because we're creating so many of these voluntary carbon credits, and so the investment company offers access to land, and it's underpinned by forestry and freehold, which are considered a relatively low risk investment, an asset class. But there is this quite exciting potential for upsides, depending on how voluntary carbon credit prices perform over the next over the next few years. It's also worth noting that Foresight Sustainable Forestry is the first and still only company that has received the London Stock Exchange's voluntary carbon market designation. And that designates that we're creating high integrity credits. And it means that all of our investors have the choice either to receive cash dividends from the sale of the voluntary carbon credits that we're creating, or if they want, we can deposit these voluntary carbon credits in specie in lieu of a cash dividend into their UK land carbon account. And so we expect over time we'll attract investors who will be interested in securing their supply of voluntary carbon credits and receiving them via a stream of dividends.
Fascinating, Richard. Thank you. Thank you very much. So to finish off now and wrap things up, I'd like to ask you, when investors are looking at the trust and looking at what's going to be happening in the next 12 months, what would you point them to as the most exciting things you feel that they should keep an eye on from Foresight Sustainable Forestry in the coming year?
The coming year is I think the most exciting that we've had so far. It's the culmination of more than 2 years since we IPO'd, and we are expecting to plant most of the 4,500 hectares of afforestation land we are developing. So that will take the number of trees that we've planted from 1.5 million up to 9 million trees, and generating 1 to 1.2 million voluntary carbon credits. So I would encourage investors to keep a track. We'll be regularly announcing the progress of our tree planting and the delivery of that, keep a close eye on the NAV, because each new forest that we establish, we're expecting a significant capital appreciation moment related to the increase in the value of the land and the creation of these voluntary carbon credits.
That's great. Richard, thank you very much. Just as a note to listeners, I did mention at the beginning of this podcast, if you'd like to know a little bit more, do check out the video section of the UK Investor Magazine website, and there'll be the presentation that Richard gave back in September. Some great charts in there, great illustrations of some of the points that Richard has made today. There'll also be a link in the notes of this podcast that will take you through to that presentation. So Richard, thank you very much for being with us today.
thank you very much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, and thank you very much to everyone for listening. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the UK Investor Magazine podcast. Please do share the podcast, and we really value any reviews and comments you leave us in your chosen podcast player. The views presented by the hosts and guests of the UK Investor Magazine podcast are in no way investment advice, and please remember all investment involves risk.